And we continue today our weekly Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist May Brussel. May, are we ready to let Howard Hughes go yet? It seems like nobody else is. He's still making front pages in all the newspapers, and developments seem to be coming hot and heavy in the case of his autobiography.
Every day he's making the headlines.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about in the last 2 weeks, and we'll talk about Howard Hughes again, apropos of Dialogue Assassination. To remind the listeners, this is a subject. Every week we talk about the political assassinations of Robert Kennedy or John Kennedy, President John Kennedy, or Martin Luther King, and things that are in the news that pertain to those past political assassinations. And in the last 2 weeks, we've mentioned Howard Hughes because he's very important in the structure of our government, how it was structured, how it was overthrown, and he's in the news every week. 60 Minutes on television every Sunday night has been running a continuous series on him. So this is the third week we talk about Howard Hughes. Just two things I want to bring out of the whole mishmash that was in the news this week, and that so much is coming out. One was on the machine that duplicates Hughes' signature. I don't know if you saw that article, Bob, but the experts have a device that writes multi-paged letters. And this is important for my research, and I'll explain why, in terms of ordering the rifle for Lee Harvey Oswald, the duplication of fingerprints.
Those machines are used commercially by mailing houses that mail out great numbers of advertising things and stuff.
But this is done with a kind of ink that is, you can not distinguish it. You see, the experts are having trouble distinguishing. See, that's the difference. We know the typed or printed handwriting that we get from members of Congress.
No, I've seen this machine at work.
Really?
It actually holds a pen.
And it
scriggles just like the handwriting. It imitates the handwriting. Well, it duplicates the handwriting. Now, the only way an expert would be able to tell that this was done by a machine is if he had thousands of copies of it and he saw that each one was precisely exactly alike.
Otherwise, you have to vary it a little bit every time.
If you only have one copy of it, there's no way that any expert in the world could tell the difference between that and the man's actual signature.
Well, that's interesting. The article about this machine, it was made in Anaheim, California, which is an interesting location, our Orange County area. The California Computer Products Company has this machine, and he said it took a week's work to put Howard Hughes' signature together this week, 1 week's work. And they took a signature from a Supreme Court document in Nevada and duplicated it on the paper. And it would take 2 to 3 months, they said, to computerize a person's handwriting to produce an entire letter within minutes. Every technique that he uses, you could do in minutes. And they took this particular the Supreme Court document from Nevada. And one of the things it did was make a direct overlay of a signature that he had years earlier. This is what you say by direct overlay. And so that brings up the subject of ordering the rifle in Dallas. And a lot of people have heard on this show the background of my research, and some haven't. But I've spent 8 years doing intensive research, deep research into the Warren Commission hearings and documents that were the basis of the Warren Report. And out of the 26 volumes, volume 16 to 26, 10 volumes, are State Department papers, FBI papers, diary of Lee Oswald, the ordering of the rifle, letters to his wife, letters to his family. And I took hours, months, maybe a month, with a friend of mine, and we took paper that you could see through, tracing paper, and took every handwriting specimen in the 10 volumes, and each volume is 1,000 pages.
Mm.
And not every page has handwriting, but a lot of them did. And some were signed Lee Harvey Oswald in print, and Lee Harvey Oswald in writing. And there was Alex Heidel, and there was Alec Heidel, and the aliases he used, things on Fair Play for Cuba and State Department papers. And we found out of hundreds, I have them on a large cardboard at home. And I put them into columns, the Heidels, the printed, the writing, and the ones with a certain capital H and another H. And we put all these little pieces of paper taken directly from the exhibits and found in a direct overlay of one of the signatures when he was in the Navy writing to the Department of Navy. Now, I know that Lee Harvey Oswald was in Navy intelligence. So it would be very easy to say that he ordered a particular rifle when there's a direct overlay with a communication to the State Department. And the mathematical chances of this happening are just, they're non-existent unless you copied the signature. And I haven't even written an article for a magazine. I should get that out because I have so much material. But what I did bring in, apropos of that overlay I found, was the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings. And we've read some of these on the air before. And I think reading them out to you is the best example of how government commissions work. So I'd like to share these minutes. They were in the National Archives, and not all the minutes of the Warren Commission have been declassified, but some have been declassified. And I'm going to read to you the minutes of a meeting. The chairman of the meeting was our Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, and Hale Boggs of Louisiana, one of the congressmen, was there, Richard Russell, who was the watchdog of the CIA in Congress. He was a member of the Warren Commission. And Alan Dulles, as a member of the Warren Commission, was at the meeting. And for those of you who are not familiar with the fact, Alan Dulles was chief of our Central Intelligence Agency and helped form our agency with the ex-chief of Nazi intelligence, Reinhard Gehlen. And Alan Dulles was the man on the Warren Commission who was appointed, he was the man removed by John Kennedy from the CIA when he said there was a hidden government behind my back. And a year and a half later, Alan Dulles was appointed to the commission. And it was the job of Alan Dulles at the commission meetings to gather all the evidence of fingerprints or documents and from the other members of the commission and keep them under his hat. So I'm going to read you the minutes with that cast of characters. And Senator Cooper was in the Warren Commission. There were 6 men at this meeting. And I'm going to read you the minutes of the meeting, part of them pertaining to the fingerprints and the handwriting, because we're talking about duplication and overlay. This meeting took place January 21st, 1964, and the Warren Commission had about 4 meetings. They were appointed in November, and they met in December. This is January 21st. And John J. McCloy, president of the World Bank and conduit, his law office is the conduit of CIA agents, famous agent, McCloy is saying, "Let me ask you about this raw material business that is here. What does it consist of? Does it consist of the raw material, the autopsy?" And they refer to the raw material as being the gun, the ordering of the gun, and so forth. And McCloy says, "But you don't have the original fingerprint evidence or the original handwriting evidence," meaning that Oswald ordered this. You have an application for a gun, you see, and in Chicago, Klein's, but McCloy said, "You don't have the original fingerprint evidence." Mr. Rankin, who's the chief attorney for the Warren Commission, who hires the rest of the staff, said, "No, but that's always available to us, though, and it has been offered to us, and I think it should be produced here so the commissioners will have a chance to examine it personally, and 400 items of evidence that we have." Senator Russell speaks, "I don't know it would help me to examine these fingerprints at all because I'm not informed to know whether they're the same thing or not." Meaning, I don't know if Oswald...
He's no fingerprint expert.
Yeah, the commission's going to bring 400 pieces of evidence for the commission to see. And Senator Russell says, "Well, that's not going to help me. I'm no expert." He said, "What I have in mind, and it was mentioned earlier, was having an independent agency or state agency who's thoroughly trained in fingerprints to review this whole situation and see whether they were in complete agreement with the FBI as to these various fingerprints." Now, you know, the FBI was very suspect in this particular assassination, and there was much evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald was an agent of the FBI. And the very first meeting of the Warren Commission, Congressman Ford wrote a book on the Warren Commission, and he said the very first meeting was this most secretive meeting that the commission ever had or that anybody ever had had in Washington, because they got word from District Attorney Wade in Texas and the Attorney General Wagner Carr that Oswald was an agent of the FBI, and they had his salary, his number, and his modus operandi. That was the first meeting of the Warren Commission. So we're getting back now, and Senator Russell says, "I think we should have someone besides the FBI look at these various prints. It wouldn't mean a thing to me to get the original fingerprints. It wouldn't be worth more to me than any one of those scrolls found in the Dead Sea," he said, "because I can't read it. But I'd like to have the more essential ones, such as the gun, the ordering of the gun." Apparently, there's some contention made somewhere along the line that this isn't the gun that Oswald had originally, but the FBI fixes his fingerprints on it. And I thought if somebody from the New York City Police Department or other source would come in And a man named Adams has had some experience, and he's informed. And if we could get two reports from two agencies instead of one, it may preclude questions in the future. Representative Ford said, "I share that view, Dick, and I don't know whether it ought to be another government agency, though, or whether it should be an independent, non-government agency." And Representative Boggs says, "Are there such agencies?"
Is there such a thing left in this country?
Is there anything besides a non-government agency that can tell you if Oswald ordered that rifle, you know, sent for the mailer, because I could order it in your name or you could order it in my name?
Well, as a matter of fact, about a couple of weeks after the assassination, a newspaper reporter, just to find out how easy these rifles are to get, ordered from the same company the same kind of rifle and signed his application L.H. Oswald,
and received the
and
same
they
kind.
Sent him a rifle.
That's right. So then Mr. McCloy said, "Well, you do have handwriting experts, but I would think if you didn't take a federal agency, take one from the District of Columbia." Then he corrects himself and says, "Well, that would be federal anyway, but we have to have something to show that there's no self-interest in this," John J. McCloy said. Then Senator Russell said, "I have great confidence in the FBI, and I'm not going to make any statement in any sense to challenge their ability. I have great confidence in them. But it seems to me that the FBI itself would be glad to have that done, because there's going to be unquestionably, in the years ahead, perhaps months, many questions raised, and it would be desirable to have a double check made of that kind that show that we're capable of investigating, and it should be done by a competent group." Now, Alan Dulles speaks up. This is where he comes in, because he's pulling in all this stuff. And he says, "Well, I wonder if we shouldn't attach them to our staff. You see, once they're on the staff, they take an oath that they can never repeat what they saw to anybody. They have to sign this top secret, because I have the commission meetings of how the staff is selected. And they say, we'll use the CIA secretaries that are out because they're pregnant at the time. We'll use the pregnant girls to help us type this stuff. They're all CIA girls. I have that. It's in this book here, the commission meetings." So Alan Dulles doesn't want an outside investigator just per se to look at the fingerprints. He wants them sworn in that they are part of the Warren Commission staff. Mr. Dulles says, "If we put them on our staff, then it would be the commission doing it, you know, instead of an outside person." And Earl Warren said, "We will borrow them from some other state, and some of them are really good these days, and it would be better than to make a hero out of one private handwriting expert who could use it forevermore to exploit the situation." In other words, if that man says the commission, he was called in, and the commission findings weren't his, he would exploit it.
Yeah.
So if they incorporate him into their staff, the staff will overwhelm him and say, "Are you greater than all the FBI?"
Yeah.
As part of the staff. Then Earl Warren, the chairman, says, "Well, we can find these people who are thoroughly independent of the FBI. And Senator Russell says, "I don't think it is a matter that we should go out and discuss, and we ought perhaps not even to refer to it along these lines, but have it quietly in reserve." And John J. McCloy says, "Well, that's a difficult thing." See, they're not going to talk about very much that they're going to get an outside person. Then McCloy said, "Did his handwriting ask for that gun? It was a different name, but was it his handwriting?" And Mr. Dulles says, "Couldn't somebody be temporarily made a member of the staff?" and subject. He's pleading, you know. McCloy has brought up an important question. Did his handwriting ask for that gun? I say it didn't. And he's saying, was it a different gun? Was it his handwriting? And Alan Dulles says, "If we're going to have this man, please make him a member of our staff." And that's the way that was handled. The other thing besides the handwriting in the news this week was the fact that Howard Hughes was supposed to have issued a false passport. Mr. Irving is saying that his wife opened the bank account, that she did open, and that the industrialist had supplied the false Swiss passport that the woman used for identification. Now, that sounds pretty far-fetched, but when you do the chronology of James Rural Ray, who left the Missouri penitentiary and went across the borders many times with a passport and several passports and different names, you can understand that somebody is issuing false passports. It is done, because as soon as he gets to Canada, he has a passport in another name. And James Ray left Missouri and went to Ohio, Illinois, and then up to Canada, down to Mexico, back in the United States, back down to Mexico, up to Canada, down to Alabama, and Memphis, Tennessee. Then he went back to Montreal and to London, Portugal, back to London, and was on his way to Rhodesia. And he had the he had several passports, and one was the name of a man who lived a mile from him in Montreal. He had four aliases.
Yeah, it not only takes a passport, it takes a pile of money to do that kind of traveling.
A pile of money and know-how. Now, there were several books that I want to get into that came out this week. There was one important article and two books. The New York Times is giving a lot of play to a new book. The title is called Murder and Assassination. The author is Albert Ellis, Ph.D., and John Gulo, M.A. I'm going to read you the full page ad for the New York Times. It says, "What makes a killer kill? To the generation in shock from terrifying rises in crime and mass murder and the assassination of President John Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, Senator Robert Kennedy, Murder and Assassination offers a new and rational approach to the causes of murder." And it goes into Nathan Leopold, Richard Leopold, Charles Manson, and it refers to the murder of Lincoln and Trotsky, and again to the president and the senator and Martin Luther King. And this book is supposed to be an explanation of why these men kill. And they draw upon psychological studies of famous psychologists to come to a composite picture of what's happening in the assassination. So I brought the minutes, the same book that had the minutes on the fingerprints, of the Warren Commission. And I want to read you the handling of the motive, the way the Warren Commission was going to work on the motive, because this book by Dr. Alice is put out by the government. It is a composite book to continue a lie, a huge lie, that these assassins fit into a package deal. When the Warren Commission met earlier than the last meeting we just read, on December the 16th, this was the second time they ever met. The first time was the secret meeting that Oswald was an agent of the FBI. This is their second meeting, Bob. Alan Dulles comes to the meeting, and they're talking about different problems that the commission's going to have. Do we have the music on? Is it coming in?
No, I think that's feeding in from the other studio there.
We hear Alan Dulles, and this is what he's saying to the Warren Commission. Again, this is the man who is going to create the entire motive. This is the man who is skilled in covert government, clandestine government, rearmament of the United States after World War II, who's working with Reinhard Gehlen of German intelligence, and he's sitting on the Warren Commission. And he says, "Gentlemen, I have something to discuss with you. I've got a few extra copies of a book that I passed out to our counsel." That's Mr. Rankin. "Did I give it to you, Mr. Chief Justice?" Earl Warren says, "I don't think so." Alan Dulles says, "It's a book written 10 years ago giving the background of seven attempts on the lives of the presidents. It's a fascinating book, and you'll see a pattern running through here that you're going to find in this present case." This is in December 63. "And I hate to give you a paperback, but that's all there is." And Earl Warren is very nice. He says, "Paperback's good enough. Thank you very much." And Representative Ford said, "When was the book written?" Alan Dulles says, "In 1952. Alan Dulles had been well into espionage for 10 years. He was at the OSS, too, before it came to the CIA. He says, "The last one was the attack on Truman, and there you have a plot. And all these other cases are habitual, but I found it very interesting." And John J. McCloy says, "The Lincoln assassination, was that a plot?" And Mr. Dulles says, "Yes, but one man was so dominant that it almost wasn't a plot." Alan Dulles is saying. Now I'm going on to some more of that meeting. He brings them a book, and he says, "You'll see a pattern running through this whole thing." Well, I have spent 8 years, and we're going to go into that in length, taking every adjective that describes Lee Harvey Oswald in the Warren Report, and I went through 26,000 pages to find the origin of every sentence and who gave the description and what countries these people came from and how they met Oswald or if they ever met them. And I realized years ago that the motive was created. But when I got the minutes of the meeting, I had Alan Dulles handing out a book. I sat down and I wrote to every single member of the Warren Commission and Mr. Rankin, the chief attorney. I wrote to John J. McCloy and said, "I'm a student of the political assassination, and at the first meeting in December, Alan Dulles gave you a book to refer to. Could you please give me the name of that book? I'd like to study it." He wrote back and said he wasn't aware that they ever received a book. I have the minutes of the meeting here. He never received the book. I wrote a letter to Congressman Ford. I am a student of political assassinations. I would like to know the name of the book that Alan Dulles gave you when the Warren Commission met, which described political assassins' personalities. Congressman Ford said, we never received a book. I have a copy, and when I publish my book, I've got the outline of several books, you know, Bob. I'm going to publish the letters from the Warren Commission telling me they didn't know such a book existed. Earl Warren never answered me, and Mr. Rankin, the chief attorney, never answered me. And the others never knew that such a book existed, and here he is handing it out, and I have a copy of the minutes of the meeting. Now, Alan Dulles goes on, and he says, I suggested to Mr. Rankin and Mr. Chairman that it would be very useful for us, and the rest of you agree, that as every item comes in that deals with the motive of Lee Oswald that I have seen, and there are 20 or 30 of them already in all these reports, those should be pulled together by one of these men, maybe Mr. Rankin himself, so we could see which would be important to us. Just on the question of motive, I found in this last paper particularly a dozen or more statements of the various people as to why they thought he did it. Now, this is where the creation of the motive comes, because I spent these years finding out who the people were who gave Alan Dulles, the chief of the CIA and OSS, the explanation of why Oswald did it. Dulles goes on, they would tell us what his character was or what his aim was and so forth, and that goes into motive, and I think it would be useful to pull all this together under one headline and not separate. I have one other point. I think it would be well to assign one of these people to the question of studying previous cases of assassination attempts against heads of state, particularly in the United States and maybe a few others. There's a pattern that runs through that, you know. It is rather interesting, and I've been studying a good bit myself and getting these books that I can get, including Don Vance and others. And I'm trying to cover all of these things, all of the assassinations we have in history. Now, you see, Alan Dulles, the covert expert in covert government and overthrowing governments, and these were the years when the Geneva Accord was being broken, and we decided, with the help of Eisenhower, we wouldn't obey it. We'd send clandestine governments into there and had agents there. He is creating a motive and a person, and he wants all the material, and he is telling you there's a pattern running through. So when this new book comes out by Dr. Albert Ellis, Murder and Assassination, he is part of the clandestine government, continuing the belief that something in the personality has singled out these men to do these murders, taking it away from a political plan to a psychological phenomenon. Now, Earl Warren says, is there anything more on this subject, because Alan Dulles has about exhausted the idea of the motive. And Earl Warren says, I think if that's all there is on the motive, I think we should go along and not get too far into the middle of a campaign here, because it would be very bad for the country to have this thing discussed at that particular time. Now, this is the Warren Commission meeting where they are deciding on the motive of Lee Harvey Oswald, and Alan Dulles is going to pull in all that information. So I brought in today to read the list. There's 26 adjectives that the Warren Report used for Lee Harvey Oswald, and one of the early shows, I think in June or July, we talked about that. I read the list of the 26 adjectives, and then I'm going to read for the first time on the radio the names of the people that worked with Alan Dulles that created the motive, because a lot of people want specifics, and in order to break down a covert government, these people have names and locations, and I'm going to read the descriptions. And then, Bob, if you want to just take any one of these 26 and throw them around, I'll tell you where the truth is on each one of these. I'll read them right off. Oswald was, 1, frustrated, bitter, neurotic. 2, emotionally disorganized from earliest years. 3, violence that he had derived from inner discontent, they said. 4, feelings of inadequacy and rejection. 5, couldn't make it with the Russians or the Cubans. 6, fantasized about being powerful commander, sometimes hurting and killing people. 7, threatened his sister-in-law with a knife. 8, disruptive in school. 9, beat his wife repeatedly. I'll continue off. I don't have to none of them. He got a dishonorable discharge from the Marine Corps. He expressed contempt for the Marine Corps and renounced his citizenship. He was disillusioned with his Russian Soviet society. He severed relations with his mother. He abused his Russian wife. He was unable to hold a job for more than a short period. He had frequent separations, quarrels, sexual impotence, inability to provide simple comforts. He shot at and missed Major General Walker in 1963. He attempted to place himself in, give a role in history. He had inner corruption, which removed any sense of decency or conscience. He protested to the world that had shut him out. He was unhappy in both the United States and Soviet Union. He failed at almost everything he tried. He had no friends. He developed feelings of aggression. He declared war against society that rejected him as unfit. Those are 26 motives. And Louis Neiser, in the introduction to the Warren Report, said, "We may never have had a subjective revelation of motive. We would bear the risk that any explanation by a twisted mind," meaning his, "would not reflect the inner truth. Therefore, the Warren Report's research into Oswald's character may supply the only reliable study from which the assassin's motive can be divined."
Now, who did they get these descriptions from?
Well, they got these descriptions. These descriptions of Oswald, the 26 I read, were what are a study done by Alan Dulles of murderers, of reasons for murder, disillusionment with society, feelings of rejection, disorganization, bitter and frustrated, inadequate sexual life, failure, what they tried. These are classic psychological terms to fit a person who would do violence in our society. But when I began to read the documents and I saw the degrees that Oswald had in electronics or radar or the position he had in the Marines and realized that his Marine record had no indication of this disorganization at all, no psychological studies, no complaints. He was the equivalent of an officer. He worked with the top radar, had security clearances, top security clearances, worked with the CIA functionaries, the officials in the Soviet Union, John McVicker and Richard Snyder in the embassy. His letters were very clear and lucid. There wasn't any bitterness. He didn't owe any debts. He didn't reject society. When he went to the Soviet Union, they had red carpet treatment. He had the best housing. He had the best room. He was employed steadily. The same way here, he had a paycheck continuously. He never borrowed, he never stole, and every check was linked to the federal government in one form or another. So when I went through the documents and saw that every one of these was a lie, then I went to read the testimony of the people that Alan Dulles is collecting. Now, he says that the minutes of the meeting, he has spoken to various people, or they've made affidavits about Lee Harvey Oswald. And I'll read you the names of the people on the air. I've never done this. There are 28 of them, and they live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I went into the background of each one of them as far as I could, just using their sworn testimony of what jobs they held, what countries they came from, their financial standing, their education. Oswald's best friend is a professor at a university down in Texas, at Austin, Texas, George de Mornchil. He became a professor after working for Brown and Root, the company that does the building for war machines in Vietnam and all over the world, and was at Haiti at the time of the assassination, safely removed from the Dallas scene, but important. The people that the Warren Report based these motives upon, I'll read their names in alphabetical order. Well, Peter Gregory is one of them. Then George Bowie, Max Clark, Gally Clark, Lydia Dimitrik, George de Mornchil, Jean de Mornchil, Declan Ford, Catherine Ford, Everett Glover, Dorothy Gravitas, and Charles Gregory, Elena Hall, Alex Kleiner, Ilya Mamontov, Anna Meller, Teo Meller, Michael Payne, Ruth Payne, Paul Regatoratsky, Frank Ray, Valentine Ray, Thomas Ray, Natalie Ray, Gary Taylor, Alex Taylor Gibson, Igor Voshinin, Mrs. Voshinin, Helen Leslie, and Frank Kristenick.
Well, who are these people?
Well, each one of those belonged to what the Warren Report called the White Russian Community. And they came right away, immediately after the assassination. The FBI has reports of them within hours of the assassination telling you what a hardcore communist, dirty rat fink Oswald is. And I broke down how many times they saw Oswald. A good percentage of these had never seen him in his life. Mr. and Mrs. Voshinin, Mrs. Gravitas, Mr. Mamontov, the Rays, never had seen Oswald in their life, two of the Rays. They were saying what somebody else was saying, and a man like Mamontov had to call up the FBI right away, and it was his duty to tell, you know, what Oswald was in terms of being a political rat and a communist. Now, the Warren Report, the Warren Commission, interviewed these people.
Let's pause here
just long enough to say that you're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Brussel on KLRB Carmel.